This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
The legendary Ralph Sampson will join us coming up in about a half an hour. But right now, speaking of legends, we bring on the head football coach of the NC State Wolfpack. That would be Dave Doran. Coach, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you. And by the way, I think of Thanksgiving, I think of all the blessings and the things we should be thankful for. I think about food. I think about drink. And that brings me to my first question to you is, you know, the cool thing about hosting the show is we get stuff sent to us. And like, for example, yep. Clemson sent us some champagne, right? Their championship champagne. The Wake Forest women's basketball program this past week sent us some gin, which was out of sight. But let me tell you something. The thing I cherish is this right here. Signed by Dave Doran. Pancake syrup. And let me tell you something now. Hey, Saturday night, it was old school rock'em sock'em football. We could have played the game without a ball. Line up and hat on hat, man on man, in the dirt, knocking people around. We don't need no stinking 50-48 game. First of 15 wins. That was a Dave Doran special Saturday night.
Yeah, it was a great win. Yeah, I was really, really proud of our guys and just continuing to find ways to win football games. And the resiliency of this football team has made it a really, really special group to coach. You know, to score on defense with a safety and then block a field goal to put it away was very special.
You've got so many different little intricacies about your team right now that I almost want to start with how different is Bailey Hockman now the second time as your starter compared to the first time. And I know you and Tim Beck have always talked about working together, and I think that that orchestra has played great music because he understood to get Devin in there. Then you have the unfortunate injury to Leary, and now Hockman's come back, and it's almost like he has taken – being on the sideline as a message and understood the second time. Coach, he's come back and been fantastic for you. Been very, very solid.
Yeah, Bailey's playing well. You know, I know he'll tell you that there's some plays he could have played better in the last one, but he's playing hard. He's playing for his teammates. He's making plays. He's having fun, you know, and I'm happy for him. You know, he's been through a lot, and he's endured, and he's stayed patient, and he's stayed with his faith, and he's taking advantage of his opportunity right now.
Coach, it's amazing what a difference a year makes. This time last year, if we're having a conversation with you, you just could not get anybody healthy. You were certainly playing, hey, next man up, best you can. But, you know, in some respects, as difficult as last year was, it was also an opportunity for guys to get snaps and experience. And, yeah, there were a bunch of L's, but at some point in time, you knew that eventually could pay off for you. Talk about how that has transitioned to what has been an incredibly difficult year with the pandemic, changes with your staff and so forth. But it seems like it's all kind of coming together. And now all of a sudden, all those tough times from last year are kind of paving the way for right now, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, you hate to go through what we did a year ago, but we used it as an opportunity. One, to build depth on our roster, playing all those freshmen. Obviously, we paid the price for it during the first year of it, but all those guys are now playing better in year two. It also, you know, allowed me to kind of sit back and see some of the things in our program that just weren't the way they needed to be. You know, the ugliness of what happened exposed some things in myself, in our roster, in all the things that we do. And you know, had we won some of the games we lost, maybe that you just keep moving, you know, but we had to change, and we did, and our players had to change, our staff had to change, and those aren't easy things to do, you know, but I give credit to the new coaches that are here. I give credit to the players for really going through, walking the hot coals and coming back and being humble, and all of us together, you know, kind of coming together and connecting in a certain way that we could build on and use last year's failures to create this year's success. And it's definitely helped us grow closer as a football team and as a family.
Coach, a couple of years ago, I was doing an interview with Brian Kelly, and they were coming off a lousy year. And since then, they've been out of sight. And he talked about what you just said, where he said, you know, the first thing I did is I looked in the mirror and said, all right, how do I get better to make our football team better? And you basically just said the same thing. And if it's too personal, you don't have to answer it, obviously. But what did you see in the mirror that you said, hey, you know what, before I worry about my staff and my players, what do I need to do better, if you don't mind answering that question?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many things. I think the first thing is when we built this program, you know, we built it with a bunch of guys that worked really hard. We had really good chemistry. The kids played for each other. And that starts with, you know, your head coach going down to your assistant coaches and having an atmosphere of positivity and also being demanding. And as we got into last year, at times I felt like I couldn't do some of those things. We were almost held hostage to the fact that we didn't have anyone else to play. And so there were guys playing that, quite honestly, shouldn't have been playing. And that's my fault, you know. And so, you know, you learn from those things, really cutting out the negativity in your program and functioning through competition and positivity. And that those are the things I saw that I needed to make sure got resolved before we started back up.
If you don't make that change in just kind of the core of your program, but having positive people and positive messaging, do you guys get through August, Coach?
Yeah, probably not. You know, probably not. And I think there's two things that I talked about on day one when they returned, is that we were going to connect in an elite way and we were going to compete in an elite way. And then those two things had to be in the forefront of what we did every single day as coaches and players. And we spent a lot of time pre-quarantine of doing things together that we hadn't done in the past, with coaches and coaches' wives, having more retreats and more things together with our players, having them around us more, eating with them more, spending more time with them, doing team building activities, and just worked really hard at it. And for 2 months, all of that brought us to where we separated. And I thought when we went apart, the guys just worked really hard on keeping it together and making sure we maintained that. And I told them this is an opportunity for us to move in front of a lot of teams that aren't going to handle this situation the way that we are. And the guys bought into that.
Dave, it goes back to what you and I talked about the last time you were on. And Wes Durham has to come join us fly fishing, right? I mean, at the end of the day, fly fishing brings everybody together, doesn't it? I mean, that's just what we're talking about.
I tell you what, man, I'd give anything to be in a river right now. It's good for the soul, for sure.
That's exactly right.
It's been a long year. I'm looking forward to my day that I get to go out there and throw one in, I can tell you.
That sounds good. Before you do that, though, you got a road trip, though, to Syracuse. And I know the Orange has had a tough year, and Dino and his guys have been through it like everybody else. And I'm sure your guys are watching tape going, man, that doesn't look like a team that's only won one game. They've got some pieces that are dangerous, and you got to be ready to roll this week.
Well, yeah, it's senior day there, you know, and that's kind of where I started with our guys. I think all football teams play hard on senior day for their guys, and their coaches are going to try to send them out the right way. When you watch them on offense, you know, they've had a lot of issues from an injury standpoint at quarterback that set them back, but their skill at receiver and running back is dangerous, and number three and number four are fast. I mean, you see them run away from people in every game. On defense, I think their corners are really good players, and they're going to bring heat and pressure and movement and disrupt. They still lead the conference in takeaways, so they do a good job defensively of creating opportunities field position-wise for their offense. So you've got to manage all the stuff that's going on, and I think Justin Lustig, their special teams coordinator, has always been one of the top guys in the league. Always has a great returner, does good things with their return game. And so, you know, it's a challenge. And when you play in the dome, it's a little bit different. Your guys have to adjust to that.
Two parts for me. One, Roddy and I are excited to have the game because we get to dig in the dirt a little bit on the matchup of Tony White's 335 and Tony Gibson's 335. Is there a major difference in those two unique defensive frames?
Yeah, I think we play more zone than they do. They're more of a man team. Both teams are going to pressure. You'll see that. Both teams move around. But they're going to bring a lot more man pressure than we will. They're going to play a lot more man-to-man when they're not pressuring than we will. I think Tony likes to mix the calls up just like their guy does. But You know, we do it with man and zone. I think if you looked at us in a breakdown, you'd see there's a lot more zone coverage than they're going to play. That's probably the biggest difference.
All right. Now, last week on this program, Ike Ekwonu showed up here, and he was fantastic. But he also became the first guest in Packer and Durham history, and we're now show 267, to eat while on the air. Dave, he had a stack of flapjacks. Look at this. Look at my man. Come on.
Yeah, he's awesome.
And you know,
man,
he went to number one on Packer. Hey, he went to number one on Packer's list when he showed up eating pancakes on his show now. You know that, right?
Yeah. I said, hey.
Yes, I do.
Anybody from Charlotte eating pancakes, I told him, I said, when this season ends, no disrespect to the NC State training table, we're going to go out and break some bread. And, man, he's got the pancakes. And guess what, Coach? I got the syrup. It's a perfect combination, man. We're ready to roll.
Where's your stack of pancakes, Pac?
You know what? Let me tell you something, Coach. If Mrs. P walks down here right now and puts 12 of them in front of me, they're gone. It'd be like you going in the river, putting in the little, looking for the fly fishing, man. Those pancakes are out of here. You kidding me? I'm ready for it right now. I am ready.
That's great.
I am ready. By the way, you know, I do appreciate you sending the syrup because that was a total surprise, and we had a big time with it on the show. I would like to send you something, if that's possible.
Okay.
Can I tell you what it is?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
It is the official ACC whistle for referees.
I'm going to throw a flag on you right here.
Yeah, there you go. I wasn't going to say a word. I didn't say anything about it. I didn't even use the P word, but I will send you an ACC official whistle. I thought that you'd love that.
That's unnecessary roughness on you right there.
Hey, the first stack of pancakes is on me, my man. We wish you, first of all, happy Thanksgiving and congrats on the success. I know this was an important year for your program to bounce back, and you guys have absolutely done that.
I appreciate it. Thanks. Really proud of the staff and the players, and look forward to finishing out the season with these guys and finishing the right way. And happy Thanksgiving to you and all your listeners.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Wednesday. Many thanks to Dave Doran. In good spirits. It should be. His team's playing well and has a chance to really finish strong and have a nice season. Ralph Sampson comes up here in about 15 minutes, and we look forward to having the Virginia legend on. We had him once in the middle of the summer, Wes, when we did a Michael Jordan special, and Ralph was fantastic. He was hilarious. So we'll see what Ralph's got to say about the hoop season getting cranked up today. And really, Virginia the team to beat on the men's side. So we'll see what happens on that front. But we still have conference cuts to go through from a football perspective.
How about this? We got conference cuts today, and we're going to revisit and also preview again. So, hey, the news that keeps on giving. Let's go to Clemson, shall we? Dabo Swinney at the podium yesterday wanted to clarify his earlier comments about the Seminoles and forfeiting the game.
I didn't say they wanted to forfeit the game. I said it should be a forfeit. I didn't say they wanted to forfeit the game. Big difference. I said it should be a forfeit. Because we met the standard to play, and we even offered to play Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So in my opinion, we did everything we could. Our medical group was 1,000% on board with playing the game.
Well, what he said, it would be accurate in terms of being able to play the game. And, you know, they turned out, Wes, the Sunday test, zero positive test, zero. And it, like I said, I think both sides did the absolute right thing leading up to noon Saturday. It's just a shame that we couldn't figure out a way to play that game. It would have saved everybody a lot of headache and heartache and roughed up feelings and all that stuff. But it truly is time to move on. I know Dabo's scheduled to join me this afternoon on radio. But, you know, Clemson better worry about Pitt. That Florida State game, that's over and done with. Never happened. And Florida State's got to get ready for Virginia because the Hoos are playing good football too with Armstrong back. So Hopefully we get games this week. That's all I can ask for. Hopefully we get games.
Yep. Today is a big day, as we all know, following the last few weeks. Wednesdays and Thursdays appear to be the most volatile, right, in terms of the postponements and cancellations. If the Tigers and Seminoles can play out the course, potentially we see them on December the 12th. Let's move to Durham. Announced earlier this week that Wake Forest and Duke will not be rescheduled. David Cutcliffe talked about that decision.
As I looked at this, we out of school, we're at a point to where these guys have been in single rooms. I just didn't feel it was a healthy thing to do, to have 2 weeks, again, coming off after sitting 3 weeks, that it would be the right thing to do to our staff, to our squad. I told our players, Steve, when we started this year, that their well-being, their safety, would be at the forefront of everything we did. And I think that made it pretty clear that the best decision we could make was to forego playing on December 19th. And, you know, nothing they had done had predicated that. And all along I asked if we could find some way to move to the 12th, which would be more appropriate for a team that's, you know, done what they've been asked to do all year, and we got a no on that. And so with that, we just decided that it was in the best interest of everybody in Duke football and just to go ahead and let the game not be played.
All right, so, Pac, here for clarity, just to finish this up, Duke and Wake Forest had one window remaining after last week's game was postponed, and that was to play the 19th of December. The part, Steve Weissman of the Raleigh News Observer asking David Cutcliffe the question, that would have forced Duke to sit 2 more weeks. The Blue Devils would finish on the 5th, would have another week off. They have just come off, as we all know, this little 3-week spin where they haven't played. So the idea of health, safety, the length of the season, things like that, Duke elected to cancel the game. They were the home team in the game, and therefore that game will not be made up. In my mind, inevitable. Some teams were not going to play the full 11. Some were not going to play the full 10 ACC games. I don't know that I'm surprised by it. It's unfortunate that here at the end we've got a horizon on this and a finality, and the game could not be rescheduled.
Exactly right. And as far as this week is concerned, again, knock on wood that we have a game. You have Duke, who's not played since November 7th, against Georgia Tech, who's not played since Halloween. 3 weeks and 4 weeks, respectively. Hey, it's COVID football, man. You just knew this thing was going to get turned all over the place. And I think we're going to have all more twists and turns across the country in terms of, hey, who can play, who can't play. Well, if you guys can't, we'll go ahead and how about you guys get together, we'll play this Saturday. I think you're going to get a bunch of that as we get into December. I really do.
Yeah. Jeff Collins is next. His team, David Cutcliffe, talking about their breaks in the schedule. As Pac just noted, Jeff Collins' team has not played since Halloween when they put it on a tee Saturday night against the Blue Devils.
Yeah, I mean, we just went back, had it's basically like another training camp, you know, one that you're obviously you're not expecting, you're not anticipating, but just trying to make sure we get some guys stronger, get some guys back healthy, you know, those kind of things. So, and then some of the things that we've done to, you know, create some more bonds that maybe you wouldn't get normally throughout the course of the season, doing some creative things, some fun things, those kind of things, Rod.
Home run derby, dodgeball. I mean, they've been playing all kinds of games just to keep that competitive edge. And, hey, we knew this was going to be hard, right? I mean, we knew it was going to be hard. But Georgia Tech is going to go an entire month and not play a game in the middle of a season. And that is, like I said, that's COVID football 2020.
So you wonder, a team that hadn't played in a month, what are they doing for Thanksgiving? Oh, Collins got that covered too, by the way.
I think the big debate is sweet potato pie or pumpkin pie. I didn't know there was a difference in those two. I thought it was the same. As long as you have enough whipped cream, I think it's delicious either way.
Easy answer. That's an absolute easy answer. Sweet potato pie or pumpkin pie? The answer is yes. Yes. I don't know why people get in these debates. What do you think? Got to be this or this? The answer is yes. Yes. Bigger
yes.
plates.
Yeah, that's the
bigger
answer.
Plates. Yeah. Load it up. Enjoy it if you got it, man. Again, be thankful awesome. For what you have, right? There are certainly a lot of folks less fortunate and going through tough times. And I think everybody should keep that in mind as if you're fortunate enough to have a roof over your head and food on the table. You know what? Anything you do to give back, man, do it. Especially this year in particular. There are a lot of folks hurting.
I think we're, knock on wood, so far today, Wednesday at 8:30, I think we have a chance. At least the early indicators are that we should be okay for the weekend, right? We're okay.
It's too early
to get these games played. I haven't heard anything that would lead me to believe that somewhere in the balance, right?
I have lived this every afternoon. I check it every 15 minutes.
On your show. It seems to break during your show, doesn't it?
Oh, my goodness. It has been crazy. It's a Wednesday. Saturday feels like even Friday. I mean, we got North Carolina and Notre Dame on Friday. I hope we can get to the week. I do. But I just know that we're going to probably have some more fake left go rights. And it's just what we have. You know, COVID breaking. Like I said, COVID don't care, man. It doesn't matter. Oh, it's a Thursday. Watch this. You're it. I just hope we have the games. I mean, that's all I can tell you. But who knows?
Yep.
Who knows?
There you go.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
A little football, a little basketball, a little bit of everything today as we get you ready for the holiday season. Again, be safe out there doing your thing. Wes, our next guest, we had a chance to interview him in the summer when we were doing the Michael Jordan special, and Ralph had some great, great stories about Virginia, North Carolina, and let's just get right to it. You know, we've been fortunate enough getting the cool stuff, so let's bring Ralph Sampson on here because I got the big 5-0 right here.
Look at this, Ralph.
Look at this.
Good morning. Good morning.
Come on, Ralph.
Hey, I see you. I don't know where you got that jersey from. I haven't seen that in a long time.
Let me tell you something. I got this from the University of – it was sent from the University of Virginia. This is the real deal right here. Real deal.
I've worn that one then. You got an authentic one. It's good.
Yeah. In fact, I see some blood right here from Jay Billis, so I know it's real.
Well, it's Billis' blood, not mine. It's good.
So how you been? You doing all right?
Look here now. Yeah, you look great.
We're hanging in here down here in Virginia. I'm in Charlottesville right now, but all is well. Just trying to maintain family and friends and keep this pandemic under control.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I know people are excited about the season. They're excited about Tony Bennett and the Cavaliers. A lot of key elements come back for them. They bring in a great player in Sam Hauser. But, Ralph, it's hard to believe now that the last time they were picked to win the ACC was the start of your senior year in Charlottesville. Man, that doesn't seem right.
Well, it's been a long time coming. That's for daggone sure. So it's just amazing that Tony can get that done. I mean, you lose two key players, and then you still pick to win the ACC. That tells you something right there.
What has Tony Bennett meant to this program in terms of, again, and you've been a part of the fabric and history and tradition, but Tony Bennett, again, you start taking inventory of this conference, and we know about Krzyzewski and Roy Williams and Boeheim. I mean, it's just nothing but Hall of Famers all over the joint. Tony Bennett's playing himself into that conversation, is he not? I mean, the guy's been unbelievable.
Well, I mean, during the Final Four run, I got some time to spend with him and his family, which was an amazing ride for me just because of his demeanor. I spent some time with his family, spent some time with his kids, and he's the right fit for UVA. I keep telling them they should give him a lifetime contract because if they lose him, it's going to devastate the whole school and the program. But amazing guy, knows how to coach, has a passion for it. We've seen what he's done in his tenure at Virginia, but I can't say much more about him because they should just sign him for a lifetime and just keep riding and win multiple championships. So, you know, UVA, y'all got to suck it up. Let's go. Let's get him signed for life.
Hey, Ralph, here's the problem. Here's the problem when you start running your mouth like that. They say, you know what, Ralph? You're exactly right. We expect some of our prominent boosters and alums to come off the hip and make sure we can take care of that.
Well, if they would let me work with the university, I'd go to every prominent booster and ask them for one. You know, so we figure out how to work it out. They need to do that too, so it works. They haven't done that yet. We'll see.
That's funny.
There
you go.
Yeah, exactly, right. Hey, let's take this tact, and I want to go back to your college coach in Terry Holland, because I was asked this summer, somebody asked me about Tony Bennett, and it was a longtime observer of ACC basketball and college basketball, and they drew some interesting similarities in demeanor and personality to Tony Bennett and Terry Holland. What do you see, Ralph?
Well, there's some similarities, absolutely. I think the passion for the game, just the thinking about the game in the defensive area. Tony has, you know, done that almost at an NBA level. But they are similar for sure in their demeanor. It fits the UVA culture, right? Now, Tony has elevated to the new style. Coach Holland's old style, one of the best ever. Coach Holland, I mean, he's like a father figure to me. And so Tony has brought that, you know, tenfold across, you know, multiple years of trying to win championships and win ACC tournaments and win and build a program that can sustain in the ACC, which he is doing, as you can see now. But I love the guy. I mean, he's amazing. His wife is amazing. His family is amazing. He fits the UVA culture.
He's also been able to develop a team that gets old, which is unusual, right? I mean, seriously, in this day and age, kids want to get to the next level, and you can't blame anybody. You want to do – you got a passion for it. You got a skill. If you're good enough, hey, go for it, man. But Virginia has always been able to figure out a way, hey, how do we develop kids, right? It's not necessarily the five-star all-world guy, even though you'd take him if you got him. But he's always done a great job developing players. And to me, watching Virginia now is kind of like watching an old-school ACC team – that you see a kid who's a freshman, you get to know who they are personally, you watch them develop. Next thing you know, they're a junior and a senior, and you say, you know what? It's a really good player. It's kind of a throwback, if you will, in this modern day of college basketball.
It is a throwback. I could tell you a little story about Mr. Malcolm Brogdon. So, you know, he played. He was good. We was at a All-American thing at the end of his career in Houston, Texas. And I had a chance to sit with him with the Naismith Award he was a candidate for. He said, Ralph, I hated the system. I wanted to run. I wanted to, you know, score more. I wanted to do more things. But I hate that system. I said, Malcolm, you could be really good in the NBA. But, you know, you got to understand what you got and what you did with Coach Tony Bennett defensively and offensively. So he gets drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks with Jason Kidd. I said, that's not a bad choice with one of the Hall of Fame guards that Jason Kidd is going to teach you how to play the game. Well, where is he sitting right now? He's got a max $80, $90 million contract in the NBA and doing extremely well. So he can develop players to play at that next level defensively. You might not like the offense, but it will give you extreme discipline and it'll make you a lot better. So some of the number one players, they don't like that style. He'll never get, you know, a blue chip guy like a Zion Williams, somebody like that, because they don't want to play that way. And that's fine, but he'll get somebody that will have tenure in the NBA like Malcolm, like Mr. Hunter. You know, he'll get those type of guys that will have a long-term career in the NBA. And I think young kids today should watch out and come to Virginia. Obviously, let's win multiple championships. That's, you know, that's what I want to do.
Ralph, I was going to say, just real quickly, style, no style. I don't care if you're scoring 90 a game or 50 a game. The object is to win, right? And nobody in the ACC in the last 7 years, with all those Hall of Fame coaches and one-and-dones and blue stuff, you know, five stars and blue bloods and all that stuff, Tony Bennett's 104-24 in the league in the last 7 years. And when he takes row and looks at inventory and looks in the rearview mirror, he sees every team in the league. I don't know of any kid that doesn't want to win at the end of the day.
Well, again, even when they went to the national title, I can talk about him because he's my cousin, and Braxton Keys. He had transferred in, and we got him to play, and Tony them accepted him into the fold. He had some struggles from Alabama to Virginia because Tony had structure. And you cannot go south in the structure. So he's going to teach a young man how to be successful after the game, after college, and after the NBA, because Braxton would not pay his rent or not do something that Tony Bennett says. And guess what he did? He put him back in the dorms and said, okay, look, dude, you got to step up. And he did. And so even at that level, he did that. And then even at the national title, that Braxton said, I can't play this way. I'm sitting in Louisville with him and a few other players. And they said, I hate this system. We're not playing. I said, y'all give you eight teams in the country and you complaining about the style of play. You're going to win a national title down low. I told him that. And then he ended up on the cover with Hunter of Sports Illustrated, and he's the happiest camper in the world. He's graduated. He's moved on. He possibly could play in the NBA. I said, remember when you was complaining to me in Louisville? Now look at you. So, you know, he will grow up a young man and make him successful, not only with basketball, but with life as well.
Yeah.
Hey, Ralph, there's one thing I thought of today when I knew you were going to join us, and it's amazing how, you know, you set a standard in this league. I mean, Pac and I have talked about it. You, David Thompson, Tim Duncan, I mean, Michael, there's a handful of guys that are the forebearers of what ACC basketball ultimately became in the 70s and 80s and 90s up into the 21st century. But one of the things that I'm not sure you do not get enough credit for this is you and John Gamble, you embraced strength and weights when you were in school at Virginia. And in the early 1980s, there weren't a lot of people lifting in basketball. They were trying to get faster. They were trying to get leaner, but not necessarily stronger. There were some guys who were strong, but not many people worked at getting strong. Now today, one of the things we found out through the weirdness of this year is a lot of basketball players couldn't play pickup ball because they weren't sure of the virus and things like that. So a lot of them talked about their own conditioning and their own strength program. I think it's interesting that here we are, you know, 2020, and we're going to go back to something that you were kind of on the cutting edge of 40 years ago, and now it's a staple of what basketball is.
Well, you're speaking of one of the best, John Gamble and Coach Dunn. I could have came out of high school to the NBA, you know, 7'1", 180 pounds, playing against Robert Parrish, Moses Malone, those guys, which would have killed me. But I wasn't ready for the NBA in my first couple of years just because of my body. And Coach Gamble and John, I mean, I spent between my freshman year and my sophomore year in the weight room every day, and I gained like 15 to 20 pounds, and we worked out every day. I got a weight book from that as well. So I enjoyed that, but it was crazy because I get to the NBA, there's no weightlifting. I mean, guys say, you know, you lift weights, you will, you know, just throw your shot off and you'll be all stiff, you'll be this, that, and the other. I was the first person to bring weights into an NBA gym. And so one of my contracts with Houston was I had to have a weight room. And they put a weight room in the locker room beside me. And the ironic thing is there was nobody lifting weights. So I go to a restaurant in Houston called Captain Benny's on the side of the road. They're a seafood restaurant. And there's this big guy in there named Robert Barr that looked like he lifted weights. I said, man, where you lift weights at? I want to find a gym. He said, I'll lift over here, I'll lift over there. So I brought him in to the weight room with the Rockets, and he worked out with me every day. We worked out together, and ironically, he became the weight coach the next year. And ironically, when they were winning championships, he was the general manager with Rudy Tomjanovich. So that's how things work and evolve in life, but it's crazy. And then the guys today work out after the game, before the game, middle of the game, during the game. They got all this other weight stuff. And then LeBron James, look at him, he's working out all the time. And that's what it's about. Then you got nutrition. I mean, LeBron says he spends $1 million on his body every year. So you got to do that to get that done. And I don't know if I was the first, but I know I had old school guys like Elvin Hayes, Caldwell Jones. They said, lift some weights. We're going to drink a beer after the game. We're not going to lift weights. That doesn't work. So I go in there and lift weights every day. So it's funny to see how it has evolved for sure.
Captain Benny's. What was the story about Captain Benny's? Now, what was the go-to that joint?
And it was a boat, like a really boat on the side of the freeway in Houston. And you'd go, they had a little bar down. You could have all the seafood you want, but it's the best seafood there. And I would go there every day because it was down the street from my house. And I'm meeting this guy, Robert Barr. Look up Robert Barr, Houston Rockets, when you get a chance. Robert named his son after Rudy Tomjanovich. So that's how tight they are. But I would go there every day to eat seafood because I like seafood at that point in time. And we would go there after we worked out. And then we would run. In Houston,
hey, I know
we would run. Go ahead.
I know you got a podcast. Does Captain Benny's make your podcast? Because if it is, everybody will want to download this podcast. Well,
I wish it was still open, but it's not open now. It's not open anymore. So it was a few places, Luby's Cafeteria, Captain Benny's, and those places have shut down since then. But, hey, we'll find another one somewhere. We might have to bring that back to life, right? It's good.
That'd be great. What's up with the podcast?
Well, I started a podcast called Center Court. And, you know, I just wanted to highlight people. You know, everybody talks sports and how many points you score, how many rebounds you get. So I got tired of listening to those type of podcasts. So yeah, I've had people like Spencer Haywood that's coming out soon. You know, Tina Thompson. You know, those guys that I want to talk more in-depth stuff about their career. I mean, Tina Thompson, everybody would know that she didn't want to play in the WNBA. And a best friend of mine, B.J. Johnson, that just passed away in Houston on a tragic bike wreck, which is very sad to me, and my best friend in the world. I took him to Houston with me, and he ended up with the Houston Rockets. But he was calling her and talking about, you know, not playing in WNBA, et cetera, et cetera, and the show was on there. And then she flies to New York on the red eye the night before the draft because of my friend B.J. And so she gets drafted. She has a 17th career, Hall of Fame career, and she was at the funeral with us as well. But she loved my guy, B.J. But stories like that that I want to hear about the game that's surrounding basketball. And we did a Zoom call for B.J. We had 300 people all over the world that was on the Zoom call, and the magnitude of this guy was really special. And he loved the game of basketball, but passed away on the tragic bike wreck in Houston, Texas, which wow. I'm still trying to get over that. But stories like that is what it's about.
Wow, that's great. By the way, before we let you go, you know, for all these young kids that are coming into the ACC to college basketball, all the hype and so forth, and again, everybody wants to get to the next level in the NBA, and I get it. What bit of advice would you give the Scotty Barnes of the world that, again, we wait for anticipation of the start of a college basketball season? And again, this is where we're talking about the ACC, the Big 12, the SEC, whatever. But what bit of advice would you give a high-flying, coming out of high school, chance to make their mark in college basketball, maybe for just 1 year? What would you tell them?
Well, you know, it's funny because all those young guys think they can play. They can play forever, and they'll make a whole lot of money, and they'll be able to live their life comfortably for the rest of life, which is not totally true. When they don't understand the economics of the game of basketball, the school's got to do a better job. I think Kashefi does some of this with his guys because they do the one-and-done stuff, and then Calipari does some of that. But they need to take some math classes. I mean, I did a seminar with the NBA a number of years ago, and they had 60 of the top kids in the seminar, and I gave them the million-dollar phenomenon. And of those 60 kids, only one knew what tax bracket they might be in. And he also knew what the percentage was, and he can compute 38% of $1 million. The rest of them, they had no clue. And so it's very sad to see that at the college level when you pull to be a student athlete and not just an athlete. So I would hope that the universities out there do a better job, especially with this social media stuff coming up, this influence stuff coming up in this year where athletes can be paid through their name and likeness, that they understand how to teach them the economics of life and just give them some fundamentals. So I think any school should do that if they're going to be one and done or two and done or even, you know, 4 years, because colleges don't do a great job with that. Even, I mean, my daughter went to Stanford. I had to teach her the basics after she left Stanford. She was a tennis player and played out there, but she had a great education, but she got it down now for sure. And she did a great job, worked the ESPN as well. But I think the college has got to do a better job, and the coaches need to do a better job as well.
Interesting.
Well, I'm going to tell you what, it's awesome to have you with us again. One of my all-time favorites to watch play, ACC legend. Still got the Puma cat on the shirt. I love it, from the All-Star game back in the day, the Puma. I'm telling you, man. Hey, you and Walt Frazier, Ralph. It's just you and Clyde. That's all it is. Yeah. Right.
So, you know that Walt was one of the first guys with a shoe before there was the Jordans or the other ones as well. So, who was back?
I love it.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving, Ralph Sampson. Always a pleasure to have you with us on Packer and Durham. Be well, my man.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, Seth Greenberg, legend, coming up top of the hour, hoop season. It was great having Ralph on. That was fun.
Oh, you kidding? One of the best, right? You want to go down a rabbit hole during the holiday weekend. Ralph Sampson, Virginia ACC is all you got to type in the search bar, right?
Yep.
Pack? And you game after game. Brian Kelly and Notre Dame visit North Carolina on Saturday, and Jen Latta of ESPN had a chance to sit and visit with the Notre Dame coach about a lot of things on this season. Number one, their return to prominence, their challenge for the CFP, Tommy Reese's impact on Ian Book, and the challenges ahead.
Brian Kelly has been talking about playing at a championship level, being elite.
Their running game and their defense are both national championship caliber. I think Notre Dame has put the pieces together.
For you personally, does Notre Dame having this type of success validate your journey?
No, I'm still on it. You know, the journey has for me been over the past 11 years, bringing Notre Dame football back to its rightful and proper place, and that is one of the elite college programs. I think we've shown that over the past 4 years, that we are in fact one of the top programs in the country.
Game over! Notre Dame knocks off number one! The Fighting Irish celebrate a win over top-ranked Clemson.
What is the difference in mentality between being the hunter or the hunted?
You know, I think we've addressed that in just the way we play. Not worry about whether you won the game, but how you compete. And judge ourselves based upon our competition. That way you don't think about whether you're the hunter or the hunted. And I think many years Notre Dame felt that way, had the pressures of having to win games. I think we've put that behind us, and we just look at ourselves as a team that competes and how that level of competition rises from week to week.
Lofts one down the far sideline. Touchdown, Notre Dame! That was a picture-perfect throw from Ian Book.
There's been a lot of attention this year on the relationship between Tommy Reese and your quarterback, Ian Book. How has Reese's presence affected the offense as a whole?
He's done an incredible job of putting together a comprehensive plan and attacking very, very good defenses week in and week out. And he commands the respect of the room. And he certainly has a great relationship with Ian Book.
There's no guarantee that they're going to be able to win out. And then they're under tremendous pressure to beat Clemson and win the ACC championship game.
We hear coaches so often talk about focusing on what is right in front of them, not to be distracted by future matchups. But you broke form recently saying, you know what? It's actually normal and it's okay for guys to look ahead. Why did you feel that way?
Well, we have a saying in our program, you know, what's important now and what's important next. I think, you know, players today, young men today, need to know what's important now, but it also influences what's next. And that was a matchup later with the number one team in the country. So how we played, how we demonstrated our preparation against the teams leading up was going to make a big difference on what was next. So it was something personal to us that we needed to accomplish. We've done that. We're not looking past North Carolina. That's important right now.
Friday afternoon, 3:30 in Chapel Hill. Going to be a good one.
Yep. On the American Broadcasting Company, back.
Yep.
I'm going to guess you got your Friday mapped out pretty well, don't you? Your Friday, I think you're probably pretty set from about noon on, aren't you?
I'm going to eat. I'm going to stay stationary. I'm going to have the remote, and I'm going to put my feet up, and I'm going to watch football in that order.
Nice. Nice.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.